This week's Parsha is Parsha's Yisro. We're holding Tuesday night Parsha summary. The Parsha begins recording how Yisro heard that which Hashem did to Moshe and the Jewish people, that Hashem took out the Jewish people from Egypt. Now the whole world heard this. And last week's Parsha had ended with a certain reaction to what had happened. And then the last week's Parsha, we saw that there was a nation that didn't like the idea of the Jewish people leaving the tribe. There was a nation that said, God is revealing himself in the world, we got to do something about that. This is a problem. This nation is Amalek. Amalek is really the name of a person, just like Mitzrayim was a person. Amalek is Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. Is Esav's grandson, right? And Mitzrayim is Noach's grandson, great-grandson. So Amalek developed into a people. And then the last six parsha, we saw how Amalek was the first nation to come and attack the Jewish people. All the other nations were scared. They were scared after all the miracles God had done for the Jewish people. The greatest empire at the time had been Egypt, and the Jews had overcome them. And along came Amalek and said, I'll attack them. Amalek saw the miracles and said, I have to attack. And in contradistinction, in the beginning of our parsha, we have Yisro, who saw the miracles and said, I have to join. And that's the beginning of our parsha. Vayishma Yitro, Yitro heard. What did he hear differently than anyone else? He heard the same thing everyone else heard. But when you hear things, you have a choice to react or not to react, and to react positively or negatively. Usually when we hear about something positive in the world, our tendency is to be like Amalek. We want to find some fault in it. It bothers our ego. If we see someone doing something good, so we have to find some fault in that, because otherwise we feel challenged or threatened. Yisro said, if this is what's happening, I'm joining. So Yisro heard all the great miracles that God did for Moshe. Here Moshe is coming into his surrogate father, Paro. Remember, Moshe was brought up by Paro. And he's telling him, you got to let the Jewish people go, and Paro doesn't whack his head off. For a whole year, Moshe is bringing plague after plague, and he lives to tell the tale. And that's a miracle. Paro didn't have to put up with this. When we read the parsha, it should bother us. Why didn't Paro just kill him, get rid of him? Well, that's a miracle. That's one of the things that impressed Yisro. Yisro heard how God had saved the Jewish people and how God had saved Moshe. So Yisro wants to join. Yisro was Kohen Midian. What does Kohen Midian mean? So the word Kohen could mean a great person. We're going to discuss the word again later in the parsha. Or it could mean a priest, one who serves God or an idol, Lavdil. There are a few understandings as to what Yisro's position was before he joined the Jewish people. One understanding says he was a prince. He was the one who was running Midian. And he heard what happened, and he said, hey, if God's revealing himself, I want to join. So he left being prince of Midian, and he left all the wealth and honor he had in his hometown, and traveled out to the desert to live with the Jewish people. Another understanding says Yisro is going to say later in the parasha, he's going to say, after he hears an eyewitness description of what happens when Moshe fills him in, Yisro is going to say, now I know that God is greater than all the other forces in the world. So our sages say, how did Yisro know that? Because Yisro had spent his life researching into the different religions of the world. And after Yitzias Mitzrayim, when he saw the great miracle of how God saved the Jewish people, so then he said, now I know that God's above everything, above all the other forces that I once thought to serve. And then maybe Yisro is Kohen Midian, he's the priest of Midian, because he was guiding them to serve this idol, and then that idol, like the Atkins diet. You know, you try this, works, and then he changes, and then he changes back. So that's how Yisro spent his life. First he convinced the people, said, we've got to go this way. And he said, maybe we've got to go the other way. Finally he hears what went on, and he said, this is the right way. And he comes to join the Jewish people. What do you want to ask?
When Yisro says, Moshe, now that God is stronger than all other forces in the world, the word
so it could mean other gods. I just didn't want to say that because when you say a sentence, God is greater than the other gods, you're automatically giving credence to other gods. That's why I chose to use the term forces. In truth, I would have rather say God is greater than the other gods. I just didn't want to say that because then you're automatically sounding like you're saying there are other gods and God is greater, which isn't so. So that's why I chose to use the term forces. Elohim could also mean forces. And that's something, in a nutshell, some say that Yisro understood God was running the world, but he thought that there were other forces that were running the day-to-day matters. Meaning he knew above it all there was Hashem, but he didn't recognize that God was running things here on earth directly, which is a mistake that happened many times. Some say that that's when we say the Jewish people served idols throughout the time of the first temple. It doesn't mean that they left God. They said, we know God's above everything, but he's so high up there, he doesn't know what's going on down here. He left that in the hands of other forces, and we have to serve them. And Yisro said, Atoyodati, now I know, ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elokim, God is greater than all the other forces, ki vadavar asher zadu aleihem, because God paid back the Egyptian people, midah keneged midah. They threw the Jewish babies into the Nile, so he threw them into the Yamsef. Now I see that God was watching every step of the way. And he paid back in an exacting fashion. And from that I recognize that God is watching over every power. It's not that there are individual powers in the world and God's above it all, but separate from it all. And that's what the Jewish people came to recognize also in the time of Elio at Har HaKarmel, in Malachim Beis, Kings 2, Kings B, whatever. That's a Christian concept, Kings A, Kings B, whatever. Elio at Har HaKarmel. Anyways, that's Malachim Aleph, it's not Malachim Beis. It's a mistake. Elio, when Elio was at Har HaKarmel and the Jewish people weren't sure which way to go, and then God sent down a fire and accepted the sacrifice of Elio, and then they went and killed all the priests for the idol of the Baal. We're jumping forward some 700 years, 600 years.
Give or take a century.
Yeah. So in the time, the first temple, when the Jewish people weren't sure, so Elio showed them that God was watching over that minute too, and God sent down fire. And what did the Jewish people react? They said, Hashem, hu ha-Elokim. Hashem, who we knew until now was above it all, is also ha-Elokim. He's also the forces, the strengths that we see functioning in this world. He's also directly watching and guiding each and every one of them. But that's something I didn't want to get into, but okay. That's ki gadol Hashem mikol ha-Elokim. According to that understanding that you're saying, is it forces, is it gods? So however you want to say it. Back to the beginning of the parasha. So Yisro heard. Yisro was the Kohen of Midian. He heard that which God did to Moshe and to the Jewish people. And he heard how the Jewish people got out of Egypt. Now, it doesn't say here that he heard that the Jewish people got the Torah. So if we look at the ordering that the Torah presents us with, the Torah hasn't yet been given to the Jewish people. We have the story of Yisro, and then later on in the parsha we have the Ten Commandments. And then we're going to get the whole Torah. That's still to come. It's not yet this week's parsha. So if we assume that the order in which the Torah is written is the chronological order, then Yisro showed up to the Jewish people before the Torah was given. And that's why when it records what was Yisro so impressed with, it records the miracles in Egypt, it records leaving Egypt, it doesn't record the giving of the Torah because that didn't happen yet. And that's the simple understanding. But we have a tradition, and it's a tradition which last year we proved from the Torah itself, that the Torah is not written in exact chronological order. In Sefer Bamidbar, we find Sefer Bamidbar begins recording something that's in the middle of the second year that we were in the desert, and then a few parshas later, the parsha jumps back to the beginning of the second year that we're in the desert. So you see that the Torah isn't written in exact chronological order. And that concept is called En Mukdam U'Mu'chal BaTorah. There, in the Torah, you can't judge what happened before what based upon the way it was written. Things in the Torah aren't necessarily written in exacting chronological order. Now, there's a machlokas between the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra. How often can we apply that? The Ramban says, wherever our sages told us that things are written out of chronological order, so we know it's out of order. But if they didn't say so, then we can't say it on our own. That's the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra says, no. Everyone who learns the Torah, meaning everyone on Ibn Ezra's level, or Rishon, could also read the Torah and say, gee, this seems to be a little out of order. Even though our sages didn't say so, must be that this section of the Torah is really not in the, didn't happen in the sequence that it seems to be written. So the Ibn Ezra says we could apply it more loosely, and the Ramban says we're limited to where our sages told us to apply it. But at any rate, there's a machlokus on our parsha, the beginning of our parsha, when did this story occur? When did Yisrael join the Jewish people? One opinion says that Yisrael joined the Jewish people as is written in this order, after the war with Amalek, after we left Egypt, before we received the Torah, he came along. And if that's so, then it would seem like he left before the Torah was even given. And there are many questions on that, but it's an opinion in Chazal. And another opinion says, no, this parsha is out of order. Really, this happened a year later. After we received the Torah, we built the Mishkan, we have the tabernacle, we're already bringing sacrifices. Yisrael comes and joins the Jewish people. And then the question is, why is it written here? Why did the Torah write it out of chronological order? And the answer is that, one answer is that the Torah wanted us to note the difference between Yisrael and Amalek. Yisrael and Amalek are neighbors. And Amalek hears what happened to the Jewish people, they attack. Yisrael hears the miracles of the Jewish people and he says, I want to join. And in the future, we're also going to see that we have a commandment to wipe out Amalek, we have a commandment to fight them, and we know that their nature is going to be to fight us. And at the same time, the Torah is telling us, look at the kindness Yisrael did with the Jewish people, and pay him back. So when we're going to fight Amalek, when we enter the land of Israel and we appoint our first king, King Saul, so we find that Yisrael's offsprings are living with the Amalekim. They're living close to one another.
Why?
Why is a good question. Is it because they weren't really Jews? Is it his nieces and nephews, not his direct children, who were living there and they didn't really convert? They just came to help the Jewish people, and that's why they didn't care to live by Amalek? Or is it because Midian is near Amalek? Or is it because the section of land that they were given when they came to the Jewish people was near Amalek? Those are possible answers as to why they were situated there. But we find that right before King Shaul, our first king, attacks the Amalekim, he sends a message to Yisrael's offsprings. He says, get out of there. I don't want to destroy you. You were kind to the Jewish people. You helped us out. So move away. And that's really what that's what the parsha is telling us here. Note the difference. Remember that Amalek tried to harm you for no good reason and pay them back for it. And remember that Yisrael tried to help you and he didn't owe you anything and pay him back for that. And that's why it's written out of chronological order. That's one possible understanding as to why it's written out of chronological order. So Yisro comes. Now, if you recall, God had told Moshe had fled Egypt after killing an Egyptian. He killed an Egyptian. His surrogate father, Paro, had heard of that and he wanted to kill him. So he ran. And he ran to Midian and he married one of Yisro's daughters, Zipporah. After he saved them from the shepherds, and they came home, and then their father told them, or their grandfather told them, invite him in, and then Moshe ended up marrying Zipporah. Now, Moshe sees the burning bush. God tells him, go back to Egypt, save the Jewish people. Moshe takes his wife and children on the one little donkey he has. He's a very poor man, Moshe. He just had a second son born to him, the first son he had born a while back, Gershom. And then he finally has a second son born to him, and he hasn't yet given him a name, he hasn't yet given him a bris milah. And when he's en route back to Egypt, so a snake appears, and we have a parsha, which really we didn't get to talk about. What exactly happened there? God sends an angel to attack Moshe, because Moshe had traveled without circumcising his son. And then Zipporah quickly circumcises the second son, and the angel leaves Moshe. Here we see the importance of circumcision. Even Moshe, who's on the way to save the whole Jewish people, if he delayed this mitzvah, God says, then I'm not holding back. I'm going to send an angel to harm him. And he was only saved because in the last second, his wife did the bris. She circumcised their second son. And then Moshe continues en route to Egypt. He meets up with his brother Aaron, and we don't hear again about his wife and children. Until here, the pasuk says, Yisrael took along Moshe's wife and children. How'd they get back to Yisrael? So our sages say that even though Moshe took them with him on his way, but when he met up with Aaron, Aaron told him, what are you bringing them here for? Anyone that's here wishes they could get out. Even us Levim, who are not enslaved, we're not You see, Moshe and Aaron could walk around as they pleased. They weren't part of the enslavement because the Levim never joined the workforce. They said, we're priests, we're holy men, we don't do this. So even us, we can't go where out of Egypt, we can't go where we please. What are you bringing your wife and kids here for? Send them out of here. And Moshe accepted his older brother's advice and he sent them back. One opinion says he divorced her. Mm-hmm. He divorced Zipporah. Sends her back with the two children to her father. Now, where did he send them back to? Yisro, was he Jewish at that time or was he serving idols? It seems from the Midrashim that Yisro wasn't a God-fearing person at this time. He was still serving idols. But, obviously, for whatever reason, Moshe Rabbeinu felt it was better to have them back there. So he sends them back. And now Yisro's returning with Moshe's wife and his two children. Now, if he divorced her, what's Yisro saying? Come get your wife. So it's unclear whether a non-Jew has this concept of divorce. The Torah says you should get married and cling to your wife. And then we have a special pasuk which teaches us that a Jew could divorce his wife. Or when a Jew passes away, his wife can remarry. Does this apply to a non-Jew as well, as far as Torah law goes? So that's something that needs discussion. But here we see that even after Moshe sends her away, his wife, or former wife, is still called his wife. Yisro tells him, I'm coming with your wife, I'm coming with your two kids. He sends a messenger, and the messenger brings a letter. And here we see another concept, that what's written is considered like it's spoken, and this has halachic relevance. We say that in the morning, if you're going to learn without talking, so there are opinions that you should still bless, make the blessing on learning Torah. You're not supposed to learn without making the blessing. But let's say you're not going to mouth out the words. You're just going to read over, so you're going to learn without speaking. So then, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say, you don't have to say the blessing on the Torah. But what happens if you're writing? You're going to write down notes. So then we say writing is more than thinking. It's thinking plus. It's closer to talking. So over here also we see, what did Yisro do? It says Yisro said to Moshe, he didn't speak to Moshe, he said, I'm coming. Well, if he's talking to Moshe, then he's not coming, he's already there. So Yisro sent a letter, he sent a messenger with a letter and said, I am coming. And yet the Torah calls it that Yisro said to Moshe. And here we see an allusion to this concept that writing is more like speaking. Writing is not just thinking. When Yisro sent the letter, when Yitro wrote these words, it was the equivalent of his having said them. So Yisro sends word, he said, I'm bringing your two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. Notice, Moshe Rabbeinu called the son Eliezer. It's an interesting name. The only Eliezer we've encountered thus far is Eliezer, the servant of Avram. That didn't deter Moshe from using that name. What is he saying, Eliezer? God helped me and he saved me from the sword of Paro. When did he name the second son? We just said. The second son was named after he was almost killed by God. And yet what's he saying? He's saying, God saved me when Paro wanted to kill me. Why didn't he name his first son Eliezer? No, that should bother us. He waited till the second son. So you have an answer. Yeah, I'm listening.
He didn't feel, since you're still afraid that Paro was going to kill him,
he was still scared of Paro. He was still scared until God told him, the people who wanted to kill you are dead. Go back to Egypt, save the Jewish people. Until that minute, he didn't feel secure. And that's why he could only name his second son, Eliezer. God say, God's the one that helped me and saved me. Who's Moshe Rabbeinu? Yeah.
In the morning, before you say Birkat Torah, you have to think about the Torah?
Two opinions. You could rely on the opinion that says you may. It's probably better to say the blessing of the Torah and say a pasuk and then start thinking. But if you want to, you could rely on that opinion. You could think things of Torah and, before you say Birkot HaTorah. Moshe Rabbeinu saw God on a higher level than any other prophet. And yet when Moshe Rabbeinu calls his son Eliezer, he doesn't say, God that I know was the one that assisted me. He says, Elokei Avi Be'ezri, the God of my father helped me out. Notice that he's stressing the point, this is the God of my father. That's something we discussed last week, that sometimes we want to strengthen. I'm the one that believes. It's important also to give over the idea, there's a continuum here. It's not just, you have to discover God. And we'll go off on a tangent for a minute. There's a very, very difficult medrash. The medrash says that Yisrael told Moshe, I'm letting you marry my daughter, but there's a condition, there's a string attached. One son you have to leave over to serve idols. One son you got to give me for my idol worship. And the Medrash says Moshe agreed. Now, what's going on here? And then the Medrash records the offsprings that ultimately Moshe Rabbeinu's great-grandson was one who served idols in the time of Micha, in the time of the judges. Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to such a thing? So without going into too many details, if we look closely at the Medrash, one possible understanding is that Yisrael said, there are two approaches to serving God, mine and yours. I checked out every idol in the world. I checked out every nonsense there was in the world until finally I came up with God. And you, Moshe, you continued. Your father gave you a tradition. Well, I think that the proper chinuch is you let kids discover everything. Let him serve idols. Let him serve everything. He'll come to the right conclusion. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no way. I have a tradition. I know what's right. Why do I have to let him mess up his life before he discovers what's right? And Yisrael said, fine, but you got to give one kid to try my way. And to that, Moshe Rabbeinu agreed, and our sages say it was a mistake. And that child, ultimately, we see, did serve God. He was God-fearing. But that's not the way you serve God. If you have the ability to give your children the tradition you have, and tell them, this is the God of my fathers, this is the tradition I have, this is the God, and there's no other way about it, then you give them that. Today, that's why I think it's worth going off on this point, that today, this is prevalent. I had neighbors who told me that. I want to let my kid discover everything. Let him decide if he wants to be religious. Well, by making him able to access every nonsense and garbage, you're making it far more difficult for him to reach the truth. It's true, ultimately, he has to reach that. But why are you putting stumbling blocks in his way? If you wouldn't tell your kid, you know what, I'm going to let you eat every garbage and every piece of dirt on the floor before you decide what's food. I'll let you eat everything. Eat wrappers, eat garbage, eat tin, eat metal, eat glass. You'll discover what's right. You don't do that. Shouldn't do that in ideology either. You could offer your kid what's right. Give him what's right. Why make him suffer through everything? Aside from which, you never know if he'll really get there in then. So that's, again, we see Moshe Rabbeinu stressing, Eliezer Elokei Avi Be'ezri, the God of my father, was to my assistance. And he saved me from the sword of Pharaoh. So Yisrael comes to the desert and Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to greet him. Moshe goes, Aaron goes, Aaron goes, Aaron's two kids go. They go, then the sages go. The rest of the people see them going, so they say, gee, must be something special. So everyone goes and Yisrael gets great honor that day. When Moshe came to Midian, so he was known, oh, he's the son-in-law of the great leader Yisrael. And now Yisrael's coming to the desert and from here on in, he's going to take pride in being Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law. My father always told us, said, I want you to know I'm the minimum. You guys have to do better than me. And that's something which I think it's along the lines of what we see here. Unfortunately, sometimes parents are jealous of their kids. And sometimes parents want to limit their kids. If it was good enough for me, why should my kid do any different? If I learn an hour a day and I'm a fine Jew, why should he do more? I eat kosher, I'm good. What do you mean? You don't want your kid to be better than you? You can't be jealous of your kid. That's abnormal. You're supposed to want your kid to be better than you. What are you saying? It's good enough for me. No. It's good enough for you. Great. Move your kid forward. And same thing here. I'm telling you guys, when you have children, I think the proper approach to chinuch is, look, this is what I do. I want you to do better. Now, it doesn't mean you have to knock everything I do. I'm not such a bad person. But move forward. And Yisrael, we start off with a situation where Moshe is Yisrael's son-in-law, and we move forward to a situation where Yisrael is priding himself, he's Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law. So Yisrael comes to the desert. Moshe comes and gives him honor. Remember that. You're supposed to honor your in-laws. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're supposed to honor your in-laws.
They give you your other half.
you have to honor your in-laws, yeah.
Your half until they give you your other half.
So, Moshe comes. Brings him to a tent, he tells him everything that happened, and Yisrael is thrilled. The pasuk says, Vayichad Yisrael. Now, Vayichad is Aramaic. Chadi is Aramaic for happiness. And the Torah speaks in many languages. So if we say it's speaking Aramaic, then the Torah is saying, yeah, Yisrael is very happy. Why did the Torah use an Aramaic term for happiness? Why doesn't it say Vayismach Yisrael? So our sages say Vayichad is coming to allude to something else. That Vayichad means became sharp. He felt knives. He felt goosebumps. His skin became like chidudin, chidudin. Why? Because Yisrael, it's true, he fled from the Egyptian Empire. He had his issues with the Egyptian Empire. But at the end of the day, that's where he came from. And when he heard about how all the Egyptians were sunk in the sea, so it hurt him. And our sages say from here, we learn that we have to have extra care when we speak to a ger. We have to remember that if you're going to, our sages say, 10 generations later, a person's great, 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 whatever, grandchildren, they're still going to feel, if you're going to speak something negative or something bad that happened to a non-Jew, they're going to feel it. Because it takes time to sever that connection. A person is supposed to sever that connection, but it's not easy. And therefore we have to have extra care not to say things that are going to hurt again. And Yisrael, when he hears all the great things, the Pasuk says, Al kol hatovo, all the good that Hashem did to the Jewish people. Yeah, it's good, and he's happy, he's about to join the Jewish people. But that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. Still hurts him. Yisrael says, Baruch Hashem. Who's the first person who said Baruch Hashem? Malki Tzedek, not Yisrael. Back in Parshas Bereishis. But Yisrael says, Baruch Hashem. He gives a bracha. Blessed is Hashem that saved the Jewish people from the hands of Pharaoh from Egypt. A difficult king, a different nation. We're going to have to take a different opportunity to discuss the word Baruch. What does that mean? And we discussed already what does it mean, what Yisrael said, now I know God is greater than all the other Elohim. Why? Because he paid back the Egyptians for everything Asher Zodu Aleihem. And we said Zodu Aleihem could be understood. They planned on dumping the Jewish children in the Nile, so they were dumped in the Yamsof. And that's B'midash Adam Moded B'modedin Lo. The way we measure out to other people, God's going to measure back to us. That's the concept of Midah Keneged Midah. God pays us back the way we are. Or another term that's used in the Midrash is that the feast, the pot that they cooked is what they ate. Zadu is like nazid. Nazid is a cholin, something that you cook. But there's another understanding, which says that Yisrael recognized that the Egyptians were paid back for that which they plotted against the Jewish people. If you recall, one understanding says that Yisrael was one of Pharaoh's advisors. So Yisrael knew what the Egyptians were plotting to destroy the Jewish people, and he saw God's hand in paying back the Egyptians, an eye for an eye, exactly what they wanted to do to the Jewish people. But it doesn't say they succeeded. They were paid back for that which they wanted to do to the Jewish people. By Jews, we say that if you thought to do something bad, if you didn't do it, you didn't do it. You thought to do something good. You really wanted to do something good. And you didn't succeed in doing it, God says, I'll consider it like you did it. Machshava tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzachva l'maaseh. A good thought, God connects it as though you had already done the action, even though you didn't do it. That's why I always say, the best thing is if you have 100 things you got to do today, and someone asks you for a favor, and you think it through and you say, you know what, yeah, I'll do it. And a second later he comes back and says, you know what, I don't need your help. So you won on both counts. Because in heavens they consider it like you did it, and then you get to do the rest of your day. So that's the best. But by non-Jews, we see over here that the Egyptians were paid back for the bad thoughts which they had. They thought to do something bad to the Jewish people, and they were paid back for that. Now, by Jews also, we have a concept in extent that if a Jew thinks he's doing something that's sinful, but there he did an action. If a Jew eats a piece of meat and he thinks it's non-kosher meat, and later on he discovers, ooh, that was kosher, he still has to do tshuva for that. That's a sin. But by a non-Jew, it's just the thought. He doesn't even have to do the action. He thinks he's going to do something. He wants to do something bad. So here we see the Egyptians were punished for what they wanted to do to the Jewish people.
They did.
They were punished for what they did. But not only what they did, also what they thought to do. So Yisro brings sacrifices. What sacrifices did he bring? In order for a person to become a ger, he has to do three things. Bris mila, tevila, to immerse oneself in the mikvah, and bring a sacrifice. And that's what Yisrael did. He brought the sacrifices. And the Gemara learns out that today that we don't have sacrifices, we could still become gerim. That's not self-understood. The Jewish people also, when they became Jewish, what did they do? They did Milah, they did Tevilah, and by Har Sinai they brought a Karban, which we'll discuss next week's parasha. Yeah?
Why do we have a difference in halakha with Jews versus non-Jews when it comes to being able to do bad?
Why is a question I can't know why God does anything. A possible understanding in it is something which we'll leave, if you remind me, next Thursday when we have time, we'll try to discuss it, okay? So it's a legitimate question. It doesn't mean I'll have an answer. Any why you ask is something you got to ask God. Why does God do something? Maybe we'll be able to understand some aspect of it. But the ultimate why, God knows why. I don't know why. We could try to understand something of it. So.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah, you want that?
Yeah, it just says here that Yitro brought a sacrifice. It doesn't. Does that consider looking converted?
Oh, so our sages say that what was this great feast that he made after that sacrifice that everyone joined him for? That was a feast of Gerus. He made a feast. He said, I just joined the Jewish people. He was happy and everyone came to wish him well. Next morning, Moshe sits down to judge the Jewish people. Yisro sees what he's doing. He's telling him, what's going on? I see long lines. Everyone's coming to see you. So Moshe says, you know, they're coming to me to seek out God. If a guy has a sick person at home, so he's coming to me to daven for him. If a guy loses something, I'm the prophet. You know, people go to a prophet. They ask him, where'd my stray camel go? They want me to pray for them. They want me to rule for them. If they have halachic questions, they come to me for all kinds of things. So... By the way, this is halacha, we mentioned it, I think. If a person has a sick person at home, you should go to the rabbi and ask him to daven for him. You don't have to go to some mikubal, you don't have to go, you want to, you could. But what the halacha says is you go to the rabbi and you ask him to pray for the person. So the people came to Moshe to seek out God. And that's what I answer them. And Yisro tells them this isn't going to work. I ran a country, I know what it means. Yisro is the head of Midian. He's saying, you want to know how to do this? Go ask God. If he agrees, you got to set up judges. You got to set up other people to deal with lesser questions. And the difficult questions, you'll deal with. And you'll be there praying for the Jewish people. You have to be available for that. And our sages say, what does it mean Moshe was sitting from morning to night judging the Jewish people? So our sages say, it's impossible. He had to learn Torah. You can't learn Torah if you're spending all day helping people. That doesn't work. So they say he took an hour or two. He took a certain amount of time. But he did his utmost to be 100% honest. And from here we learn out, from the fact that the Pasuk considers it like he was there day and night, so our sages say the Pasuk is telling us that if you judge a person, if you're a judge, and you do your best to be 100% accurate and honest, so the judge who does his best to be perfect and do everything exactly right is considered like he's become a partner with God in creating the world. And that's why it says like day and night, just like the world, every day of creation is described. There was night, there was day, and then another day of creation had finished. So too, the judge, when he judges, even if he's like Moshe, where he only has an hour or two to judge, it's as though he became a partner with God in creation. So he tells him to set up judges, and God agrees, and that's what he does. And then Yisro goes back home to teach his family about Judaism, to become Gerim. And now we come to the point of the Jewish people coming to the desert of Sinai, and they're ultimately going to come to Mount Sinai. The Torah says, "Vayoma ze bal midbar Sinai." On this day they came to the desert of Sinai. Why does it say on this day? So our sages say because when you learn Torah, what happens is the first day you're all excited. Wow, this is interesting, this is amazing. And then a little bit of time passes by and you get tired. You say, you know, maybe I should do some other things. Or you even come in and learn. But your learning is like this, and your learning is like that, and you're straining to put your focus on what you're learning. And sometimes you feel like you're doing the guy who's giving a shiur a favor that you actually show up. And sometimes you are. but the beginning, you're excited. And as time goes on, so all of us, we take it for granted. We're given a gift directly from God. And yeah, okay. Like every good thing, we take it for granted. And then we get used in. We're not as excited. So the Torah describes our coming to Sinai. When we're first going to get the Torah, it says on this day. Every day you should feel like, wow, I could be here. So that's not easy. It means you got to give yourself a pep talk every morning. Hey, you know what I'm doing this morning? Okay, So you got to also be original, because if you're going to give the same pep talk every day, you'll get tired of that too. Okay, that's why you got to be a good coach. Sages said, you want to win in the war of serving God, you have to overcome yourself. You have to use wisdom, cunning. So they come to Sinai, and the pasuk says, "Vayichan sham Yisrael neged ahav." The Jewish people, in the singular sense, "Vayichan," and the Israel camped like one person. And that's what our sages say, "Ki ish echad belev echad," like one man with one soul. This is the one time when the Jewish people were unified, and in order to get the Torah, were unified. Every other time we camped, doesn't say that. Because we camped, there were quarrels, and when we left, there were quarrels. You know how it is. Think of every family trip. That's mine, you're sitting, you make room, blah, 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 right? Okay, so every other time we camped, there were fights. Every other time we just started moving, there were fights. We came to Sinai, we're coming to get the Torah, the Jewish people are unified. God calls him and he tells him, Kotoma levet Yaakov etaged livnei Israel. So shall you say gently to the house of Jacob, Beis Yaakov, the Jews, the Jewish women, and vetaged, and tell forcibly the limitations and the laws and all the little nuances, the tough parts of the Torah, tell the men of the Jewish people. Why does the Torah do two things? First it says, tell the women in a gentle sense, and tell the men, be tough with them. And the second question we have to ask ourselves, notice, when God says, tell the Jewish people about the Torah, God says, first tell the women. It doesn't say, first tell the men. What do you mean? I learned the Torah. I'm the one that's going to run the house, right? No. Torah is telling you the women are far more inclined to the way of the Torah. In many of the sins that we're going to encounter, that the Jewish people sinned, the men sinned. The men might be the force that's supposed to learn Torah and develop it, but the women have a natural connection with the Torah that the men don't have. And God tells them, first tell them and tell them gently. So you might think, what do you mean? There are laws, this is talk, there are details. Our sages say, even in one's own home, one has to speak gently. Our sages record many stories about that. They say, you think that you'll want to be frum, and you'll bang on the table and you'll yell, you brought that hechsher into the house, we never eat that. Our sages say, you put pressure when it comes to religion in the home, then you're going to cause people to sin in the home. On Friday afternoon, when they didn't get to light the candles, and they look at the clock, and the sun said, yeah, but if the husband comes home and the candles aren't lit, he's going to blow a gut. So then the wife's going to light candles, even though it's forbidden biblically. If she's nervous that if he doesn't have his meal ready in honor of Shabbos, then he's going to blow a gut, then she's going to do things that aren't permitted. Our sages said, even in one's own home, when one wants to enforce keeping the Torah, one has to talk gently. And we see that over here too. When God comes to talk to the women, and he speaks to the women before the men about the Torah, he says, speak to them gently. Don't go into all the details and all the tough parts of the Torah. The men, yeah, give them over the head. They can handle it. They need it. So, God introduces himself. You saw that which I did in Egypt. And I assume everyone here has been going to Kuzari classes, so we don't have to elaborate on the concept that our attachment to God begins with Egypt, not with creation. From Egypt, we jump back to creation. Now God tells the Jewish people, you have a choice. You want, accept my mitzvahs, you're going to be my chosen people. And our tradition says, in the end of the Torah, in the last parsha, in Vezos HaBracha, Moshe Rabbeinu's last speech, Moshe Rabbeinu describes this event, the giving of the Torah. And when he describes it, he says, Hashem Sinai ba v'zarach mi'seir lamo. God came from Sinai, but he rose, so to speak, like the sun rising from Seir, from Esav territory. Hofia, he appeared mehar Paran, from the mountains of Paran. Ve'atan, he came merivivot kodesh. Moshe is describing like God's come from all kinds of different angles to the Jewish people. So we say it's true, God came to them, so to speak, from all four sides of the world. But we also say that God first came with prophets probably to all the other nations and said, I got a Torah, you want it? And they said, well, what's in it? And then God said, okay, Esav, it says don't kill. I can't handle that, what do you mean? What if he cheats me? What if he comes to the Jewish people? They say, Nasev Nishma. God comes to the Jewish people and says, you want to listen to me? We'll cut a treaty, you're going to be my chosen nation. And the Jewish people accept.
They asked God how much it costs?
They didn't ask God any questions, and that's the key. The key is that if you ask questions, what you're saying is, God, what you say is going to pass through my mind. I'm going to decide what to do and what not to do. And the basic tenet when it comes to dealing with God is, he's God and I'm not. So if he's God, then he knows what's going on, and I'm not God, so I don't know what's going on. So if he tells me kill a person, I guess I better kill a person. He knows what's good and I don't. If he tells me don't kill a person, I better listen to him. Whatever he tells me, I have to listen to him because he knows better than I do. The second I come with preconditions and I say, well, tell me. That means I'm going to think it through and decide whether it's for me or not. That you already killed it at the first base. There's no place to go from there. When we approach the Torah, we have to accept, what does the Torah mean? God's telling you this is what's right. Well, if God's telling you this is what's right, then where's there room to discuss? We're out of time.